program, which she started about 6 years ago. She's doing great thing. She graduated from Ibadan, that university again. Eh? And she also trained in the United Kingdom. A family physician with over 3 decades experience in various specialty. A teacher of physicians, Dr. Adenaike, has an organization that focuses on family health across lifespan. Doctors, welcome to Doctors Round.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you much. Now, let's go quickly to this. You guys are family physicians, primary care physicians, and you frequently do annual checkup for people. What is your clinical opinion of the health status of Nigerian health sector? Dr. Adenaike, do you want to start with that?
Thank you. Thank you very much for that question. And that's a very important question, an assessment of Nigeria's health status. I am an optimist, and I will say Nigeria is actually doing very well. In the 6 years that I have been here, I have seen a dramatic change in the landscape of health in Nigeria. The stories and the statistics are true, but nobody is focusing on the other way around. I have seen people returning home. I have seen the trust that is now building in the healthcare brand that is Nigeria. I have seen the reverse in health tourism of people going to South Africa, people going to India. Now, Nigeria is the place that most multinationals who want to build healthcare. Nigeria is now the go-to place. And we are now having companies from Europe, we're having companies from America, and we're having global venture capitalists looking into the Nigeria space because we're the most populous nation in Africa and we have the human capacity. And so I am excited. I'm not going to say the state of our healthcare is moribund. I'm going to say the state of our healthcare is being revived and it is being revived every single day.
Wow. Thank you very much for that. So there's hope. And it's good to
hear
this message of hope. Well, before I come to you, Dr. Dohadi, LJ Daddy was here last week and he was lamenting about how his doctor left the country and so on. I think he has something to say, to ask you doctors here. LJ Daddy.
Hello, doctor. This is LJ Daddy, Lazizi Jacob. Thank you, doctor. London doctor, American doctor. How do you do? Very pleased to meet you, isn't it? My friend Luku said that's the way I should be talking to people who come from abroad. But I'm very happy that we now have a doctor in our area. But I'm worried, maybe I have to sell my Okada. Because my other doctor, I go to the clinic, they say I shouldn't eat. I didn't eat. 2 days I was waiting, very hungry. I didn't eat. LJ Daddy was hungry. Then when they say, sorry, your doctor has gone to Canada. But I'm very happy now that we have doctor come, Dr. London, Dr. America. I'm thinking maybe London and America doctor don't understand the way we talk in our country and how we do. But my friend, Lukumo, say you are very similar to us. So thank you. I'm very, very happy. I'm pleased to meet you. And I'm very fortunate with this opportunity. I want you to be my family doctor for all my children and my wife. Thank you. This is AJ Daddy. We want to hear about your work now. Thank you. Brain gain. I am very happy.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you, LJ Daddy. Dr. Doherty, here is this guy, a Nigerian here, who is very pleased to have you return home, but he has some anxiety. How can you help him?
First of all, thank you, LJ Daddy, for coming on the program, and thank you for welcoming us. I agree with you that unfortunately your doctor left and went off to Canada, and unfortunately you've had to sell your Okada and you're worrying about your family. So what I will say is that even though things have been looking very difficult for some time, there are doctors who are now coming home. Many have gone, but some are coming back. Some are still here. Some have returned. And in addition to doctors, there are also very well-trained other professionals who are also part of the healthcare system and who can help us to help you. One of the things that I loved that you said is that you want somebody to be taken care of. You want us to be your family doctor, be taking care of your wife and your children. That's exactly why I came back, because there's a need for us to practice preventive medicine and not only consider that you come to the health facility or to the hospital when you are sick, but that when you are feeling well, we can help you to continue to stay well. And this is exactly what I do. Along with my colleague, Dr. Adenike, we emphasize screening, immunizations, and preventive healthcare. We'll talk more about that as the program goes on. So thank you.
You bet. Thank you very much. Let's go back to the beginning. Dr. Adenike, you left Nigeria for the United Kingdom. Some would say greener pasture decades ago. What informed your decision at that time?
Thank you. That's a very good question. Obviously, everybody leaves for different reasons. And I remember when we were in our final year in medical school, a lot of my colleagues were already doing the USMLE exams, CLAB exams, and so on. I was not remotely interested. I am a proper daughter of the soil. I had no intention of ever leaving Nigeria. I was enjoying being a young doctor and learning and trying to decide which specialty I was going to work in. However, as that progressed, this same brain drain that we're talking about in the 80s is probably just as bad as it is now, if not worse. All the lecturers that I looked up to that would train me in the various specialties I was looking to go into were living in their droves. All the people that mentored me, all the people that taught me, all the people that I wanted to teach me going into my postgraduate education, they were just no longer there. So the idea was for me to go to the UK, get my postgraduate education, and then come back. But 1 year became 2, and 2 became 10, and 10 became 25. But I never lost the idea of coming back home, and I never lost that thing in me that just wanted really to practice in Nigeria. I became a doctor to look after Nigerians, and that's always what I always wanted to do.
I like that. You became a doctor to look after Nigerians, and that creates what I would like to refer to as medical nostalgia. Most of us who are abroad keep thinking about what we miss and what we ought to do and how we want to go back and help. You are bailing the cat, and we really appreciate you for your contribution. Dr. Doherty, you returned to Nigeria to practice medicine while others are leaving. Huh? What's wrong with you? What motivated you to return at this time?
So I think that's similar to Dr. Adenike. At the start of my career, when everybody was taking PLAB and USMLE, I had no such intention. I got into residency training, and I was training to become a pediatrician. And then, you know, life happened. My husband was preparing to leave the country, and it made sense to go with him. So the exact thing that motivated me to leave motivated me to come back. It was family. And I was quite prepared at some point in my career to train abroad and then to return. And so, you know, at the time when it came, it was convenient. It wasn't like my life was going to shift and change. I didn't do any of my exams until I was safely and comfortably in the US. I started off by getting a master's in public health, which was exactly what I was planning to pursue at that time in my career, but I was planning to do it here in Lagos. So I just applied to the schools I was thinking about in the US, got in, and then proceeded to do residency training. So my return was motivated really by the very same things that took me away. It was family, and it was a consideration, very important, that we wanted to be here not only for Nigeria and Nigerians, but really for our families, both my husband and I. So we had a 5-year rolling plan, and we would plan every year. We would again look at it, are we coming back and when? And it was important to keep our eyes on the ball. And the first opportunity we got, we came back home.
Wow. Wow. That is an interesting story. Encouraging indeed. I think it gives credence to what our parents always say. I remember when I was living in Arrow, my mother said, before you left Arrow, you got to have something, because a needle that doesn't have a thread get lost in the stack of hay. You can't find it. So you got to have a wife so that you come back home. I think our listener can take something very important away. Both you, Dr. Adeniyi, okay, and Dr. Duarte said something. You said in a different way, I am rooted to Nigeria. You, Dr. Duarte said, you know what, it's the family. Hey, so let us get that straight. Regardless of the quality of life and those stresses, having the family and having the connection is a great pool. Well done. You are now back in Nigeria. Are there advantages to your return, Dr. Duarte? Are there advantages to your return? What are the benefits apart from your hobby? You could have your hobby back home, back in the US.
Right. So a few things have been important. When we left, we had aging parents. To the glory of God, they're both, our mothers are both still alive, pushing 89 and pushing 90. It's been very important for us to be here for them. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine navigating the healthcare system in Nigeria, which can be, it's a bit fractured. If you don't know, then, you know, you don't know. So one important thing has been being able to be with our mothers as they've aged and to care for them even as we care for other people. My husband has worked in the pension industry from the time he came in, a lot of investment. So this is important for us, being able to care for them into old age. The other thing that has been good is the connection, the transgenerational connection. Now, for me, not just having my mother and my husband's mother, incidentally, both had children late. We were fortunate enough to meet each other early enough to have our children earlier than our mothers had us. And so our mothers seeing our children and our children being raised with them were also very important. And then just getting back into the swing of things and really understanding where the issues are in Nigeria. So I'm not only passionate about medicine and healthcare, I'm passionate about leadership and development. And I, you know, do many other things apart from healthcare. So being able to reestablish myself in the various leadership opportunities in Nigeria across the country. So I'm speaking to you now from Uyo, which is one of many states where I've worked in the country. Mm. I do some work in Kaduna, a fair bit, and work with various fellowship programs, leadership fellowship programs, working with public sector, aspiring public civil servants, and really helping them to understand what it would take to work as a leader in Nigeria. So for me, coming back has allowed me to really explore all the various things that I'm very interested in doing. Healthcare, outside of healthcare, making sure my family is together and we can see one another regularly. And of course, meeting people like Dr. Adeniyi in one of my many affiliate groups.
Interesting. So you're back in Nigeria, you're practicing now. Dr. Adeniyi, what are the challenges of practicing in Nigeria? Returning, you've practiced everywhere. Now you're back in Nigeria. What are the challenges?
There are challenges, and I wouldn't lie about that, but they're not insurmountable. So the first thing is just really reorientating myself in terms of even the language, you know, the way I speak, the way I dress. It's interesting. I have a really lovely friend, classmate, a fabulous psychiatrist who wrote a paper, and I think the GMC published it, about international medical graduates adapting to life in the UK. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, he titled it, "Have You Learned to Dress Down Yet?" So where you had to learn the culture in the UK, to dress down, to mind your language, to remember your P's and Q's and so on. The same thing when you come back home, you have to reacclimatize in terms of speaking to people in a language they understand, in terms of changing my lingo. So asking somebody if they're sick is not something I would do in Nigeria, because in the UK, when you say you're sick, you mean, are you vomiting? But in Nigeria, it translates to something completely different. When patients say, you know, when you ask them, do you have diarrhea? And they say, no, but I've been stooling. It means, you know, so I had to rechange my language. I had to change the way I talk to people and approach them. But I think what was most important is I had to learn a different way of delivering healthcare. In the UK, everything is very structured and everything is at a GP's fingertip. I had to literally create that system for myself in Nigeria. I had to, you know, I have to have contact with other specialists. Incidentally, that's where Dr. Orode and I met, is in us networking and recreating what we're all familiar with, the ability to call a neurosurgeon, the ability to call a cardiac surgeon, the ability, and you do that as a GP, whereas in the UK, all I have to do is dial 999. The ambulance has to be there within 5 to 8 minutes. But in Nigeria, there is no such thing. So it was a real shift in me understanding that the buck starts and stops with me as a general practitioner. So that took a complete change of mindset. But with determination, and as I, with a lot of people coming back, we've been able to create that network of like-minded doctors, and a lot of us have returned. Not only that, we're harnessing technology, so we're able to access and post scans, questions, and things online to our colleagues. So we're leveraging on everything, any which way we know to do it, to deliver good quality care in Nigeria. So the structure is the first thing that I missed the most. The second thing that I missed the most was availability of drugs, consumables, little things, you know, that you don't have to think about outside Nigeria. You have to think about everything from the type of needle that is available to even something as simple as paracetamol. Is this drug the right one? Is it safe? You know, because there are issues of fake drugs all over the world, but I'm sure you know that in Nigeria, it's especially a problem. So finding secure routes to get all of these things, and you have to learn it from scratch. Not to now talk of the almighty NEPA in terms of no power, again, something you never have to think about. So you're setting up a clinic, you need to provide your own water supply, you need to provide your own electricity, to even training your staff, you know, in terms of how you want them to comport themselves, how you want them to receive your patients. You know, that patient is king. That's something that was new to some of them, depending on where they had worked and where they were coming from. But there were all of these, whilst they were challenges, I found it really interesting. And I just saw them as, okay, we have to be creative and create a solution to all of these things. And within a couple of years, we had all of those things at our fingertips. And it was easy to deliver the kind of care we always wanted to deliver without compromising.
Fantastic. Howard, I'm looking forward to reading your own book. A book jointly authored by yourself and Dr. Duarte, and it's going to be titled How to Readjust to Practicing in Nigeria. I'll buy a copy and several copies to give out. Thank you very much for that. You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and we're talking with pioneers in this philosophy of bringing, returning to Nigeria by the medical diaspora. Our guests today are Drs. Duarte and Dr. Adenaike. From your experience, Dr. Duarte, what are the... maybe I should take it this way. Dr. Adenaike, you were discussing that. What are the impediments to practicing academic medicine? You see, a significant proportion of Nigerian medical diaspora are in academic medicine, and they want to continue. Is it a question of policy, people, or politics, or all of the above in practicing academic medicine?
That's a very good question, and I'm glad that you asked it. So part of my plan on returning to Nigeria, before I left the UK, I became a trainer. So my practice was a training practice in Essex, where we trained doctors, we trained nurses, we trained pharmacists who wanted to become prescribers. We ran courses. So we were really big on education. And I was also an appraiser. So I appraised other doctors. I helped them, you know, in their career and getting the, you know, revalidation and so on. And that was a skill that I didn't want to lose when I came to Nigeria. And I looked at the formal sector. So the teaching hospitals is where you would normally want to go. And I just realized it wasn't going to work for me. And I think me personally, I have other colleagues who have come back and gone into those environments. But I think for me personally, it just wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Because the way I had trained and I was training in the UK was just very different. And I just thought the challenges would be really huge for me. And I wasn't prepared to do that. I think I liked the idea of being able to micromanage it in a way that I could deliver individualized training, you know, to be able to meet the needs of my students without the, what I would describe as a bit cumbersome, you know, politics and policies that I just wasn't familiar with. So it's not impossible. And I still get students from the UK. I still get students from UCL, University College London. My last student came from the University of Cardiff. And Orode was instrumental in actually helping her journey of training in Nigeria. So again, I just want people, we're in that innovative stage in our lives as a whole world entirely. The pandemic has taught us to think outside the box. So what I would do is whatever skills people have, when you come to Nigeria, just be prepared to be flexible and be prepared to be adaptable and be prepared to use whatever is on ground to achieve what it is you want to do.
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break. And I asked you what music you like. You say, well, I could go to town with whatever I like. So Toye, why don't we have something that tells us to come back home to Cyril, maybe from Fela. Doesn't matter.
That would be nice. That would be nice, actually.
Doesn't have anything to say that we should come back home. However, we already lined up something that says Great Nation, courtesy of Timi Bakolo.
Fantastic.
Great.
Hope for
Yes, indeed, we are a great nation. Yes, two doctors who've come back home to rebuild their fatherland. AJ, I'm enjoying this.
You bet. We have patriotic individuals. We're just in the newsroom here. We've been chatting away how our patriotism score pale in the face of these two ladies who are really setting the pace. I have a question that was sent in from Kaduna for Dr. Adenike. And the person said, Dr. Adenike, doctors in Nigeria have to improvise a lot. Do you find that frustrating? And did you find it frustrating when you first arrived in the country? That was a question from Kaduna. Dr. Adenike, I think you're mute. Are you there?
Okay. Yes, I am. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think that's a very good question, because nothing can really prepare you for Nigeria if you've been away for quite some time, which I had. So having thought that I had everything planned, and I did my return sort of in stages. So I came home, I looked at what was on ground, I looked at whether I could work with people, whether I could partner with people before I actually started my own practice. So by the time I came, I thought I had everything ready, but he's absolutely right. You have to learn to improvise. And I found that my practice changed over time. So when I first opened the hospital, it was just a clinic. We just wanted to be open 8 to 6. But I soon realized that with the traffic in Lagos, with the way Lagos can be sometimes, we needed to have what we called a short stay. So we soon quickly created what we call a short stay, where people could stay in overnight. Because if you charge somebody who is just getting well to go home from Lekki, by the time they get to Ikeja, they're already dehydrated again, they're already tired, they've been in traffic for 3 hours, and so on. So we had to adapt our practice in a way that we thought, okay, we're never going to discharge anybody beyond. If you can't go home by 4 o'clock, then you have to spend the night, because it's safer for you to go home during the day where traffic will not be an issue, where obtaining your medications or anything else you might need to keep you well will not be an issue. So yes, I had to learn to adapt. I had to learn to do a lot of things that I wasn't doing. I had other people doing for me while I was in the UK. I had to learn to do a lot of those things myself. But I found it interesting. It made it interesting. It made it easy for me to build the practice, because it meant I was on ground. I was seeing the challenges, and we were just changing and adapting. And those things actually helped my practice to grow.
Interesting. I think the lines are hot. I'm sorry, but here's another question here from London. Here is Rotimi from London asking, how do both speakers navigate the areas of medical errors due to human factor? Right? That was the question. In other words, to put in another, how do we learn from the mistake in Nigeria's health sector? Is there anything that you guys, either of you, Dr. Duarte, do you want to comment on that?
Yes.
Medical errors.
I won't dwell only on medical errors. I'll sort of take learning from what it is that you're doing. So Dr. Adenike spoke about making your primary, you know, having seen just how traffic was and how things were, how they adapted. So I think my public health background has served me very well just in thinking about what it is exactly I want to be doing and how we want to approach things. So just in general, there's a whole plan, do, study, repeat cycle that we go through, where you do something having planned it, you do it, and then look at your results after a month, whether it's you do a form of outreach and then you come back. And so that's one important way to sort of study what you're doing in real time, you know, because you're spending money and you need to be accountable both to yourself and whoever is supporting the output of your clinic or your health facility. The other thing, and this is really important, and I think more focused on the question that the caller from the UK asked, is how do you deal with medical errors around, I assume, prescription or administration of medications. So in my training, we were very comfortable with referring to formularies. So I don't go around thinking I know the dose of everything. It is very likely, and this is true, I'm sure also of Dr. Adenike, a lot of the time on our chats, we're asking, I've used this drug with this person, I'm about to add this other thing. Does anyone know of any concerns as to why we shouldn't add this or use this? Or who's a malaria expert here? So we're almost never acting in isolation. And then a lot of people have electronic medical records to support their practice. We do, but it does not, we don't, obviously the electronic chart cannot pull up your medication for you. There's always more than one person. And in my practice, there's always more than one person looking over whatever it is you're about to give, especially because we attend to a lot of young children and obviously we focus on immunizations and those kinds of things. So I think there are several ways in which you can ensure that you're not making mistakes around medications. One of them is to ensure that you have staff who are well-trained and who are looking out for one another. The other is to ensure that you're using the right doses and you're checking with other practitioners aside from yourself.
You both have been very innovative. You've moved things around. You've been very successful in creating this community of practitioners using electronic medical record, and you're doing a great job. But we've had returnees, Nigerian medical returnees, finding it difficult to settle. Why do you, most returnees find it difficult to settle back to practicing in Nigeria? Do you want to comment on that, Dr. Dwadi?
Yeah, I would say most do. I think many people do. But Dr. Adenike gave a really, she said, I came back a few times and I checked things out. I think that, you don't come back in a vacuum or into, sort of a space that you just plop yourself into. I explained earlier about, for me, family was very important. So having made up my mind that I was going to come back, it was important to determine what exactly I was going to come to. And so having a soft landing, something that you're coming to that is a system that is designed that you are comfortable with and that you know how to navigate already. For me, it was public health and teaching and setting up the dozens and dozens of maternal newborn child clinics in HIV. I was very comfortable in that space. That's my space. And so working with Columbia University at the time, I was in a system that worked. I didn't come straight into, a system that I was not familiar with. So that's one way. And that's one thing that many people don't necessarily have the opportunity to, or don't factor the time in for. So I was fortunate in that regard. I was looking out for it because I recognized it was important for me to come into a space that was comfortable. And when I say comfortable, it was not so much convenient because my family was actually in Lagos while I was in Katsina, Gombe, Kogi. But it was a system that I was able to work in, even though I was physically away from my family. But family was also important. So knowing that they were together, they were safe, and they were comfortable, and that we were no longer, far away from one another. Because for the year before I moved home, my husband had moved ahead. And then having mentors, people with whom you're checking in regularly. I think a lot of people overlook the importance of a community of practice, of a circle of support. And that's a really critical thing. So you have to have those. People don't think about those as things that they need. And then, of course, minimize surprises. I don't know how to minimize surprises. Surprises happen, NEPA keeps taking lights on the transformer blows, or it just disappears, or your most trusted staff just gets up and says she's going to the UK, literally overnight, So I don't know how to stop those from happening. But some people just go into a state of shock. And it's not just medical practitioners, it's everyone, people whom we returned around the same time. They just got up and they left. They weren't able to. But I think one of the most critical things, and this is why if you're coming back home, don't come back home for the reason of everybody is coming. Just have clarity on your why. Why are you returning to Nigeria? What are you coming to do when you come home? And what are the plans if something doesn't go right for you to remain here? as opposed to, you know, what's the plan to return? That might be helpful in thinking
about it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're listening to Doctors Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and on our sister radio, Live Radio in Ibadan. This is a program in partnership with Turn Nigeria. I have a question here from Lagos. How can we improve our emergency services in Nigeria, especially nationwide? Our people are dying and traumatized due to urgent care, lack of urgent care, and inattention. What are our returnees doing about this? I don't know. What are you guys doing about this? Or what can we do about it? Who out of you can take it?
I'm going to ask Dr. Orode to answer that question. But what I want to take us a little bit back, because I think this is very important.
Mm-hmm.
The question about medical errors. I think the important thing, which a lot of us learn when we're abroad, is the culture of transparency.
Yep.
So when I employ new staff, everything we do, we have periods where they're just watching and observing. And we make sure that our culture is openness and transparency, that they're not going to get in trouble if they're honest that they've made a mistake. And there's that, it's not about being punitive. If I know an error has been made, then I know how to correct it so that patients do not come to harm. But if they don't have a safe place to come and tell us when they've made an error. So the key, I think the message is really the openness and transparency and having that culture, because we're all human. And with the best of efforts in the world, we make mistakes. The airline industry has the best safety records. Even the medical industry, the healthcare industry, is copying airline industry when it comes to issue of safety. But these things still go wrong. But we need to be open. We need to be honest. We need to be accountable. We need to have that culture where we're open. And we encourage everybody under us to be able to do that. Because what I tell them is treat people as you want to be treated, as you want your family or your elderly parents to be treated. Errors will happen, but we need to be open and accountable. And we need to have systems in place. And these things are available out there. There are loads of means and ways, one of which is what Orode said, is constantly checking. Two people check things before you administer it, and so on and so forth. But I just want to make the point about openness, honesty, and, you know, our ability to own up when we've made mistakes.
Very valid point, really. And it looks back to what Dr. Duhati was saying about not being afraid to check the formulary.
Yeah.
The fact that you're a physician doesn't mean you cram all the doses of the medication. Please check.
In fact, we don't ask, you shouldn't. You must always check, always.
Great point. So, Dr. Orode, do you want to address this emergency question?
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Toyin, for the sort of the important drawback to the culture of transparency. In terms of improving emergency services in Nigeria, you know, emergency systems are just that, they're systems. And while it has been easier for returnees to build systems around the care that they provide, emergency systems are a little different. In Lagos, we have a 767 and a 112 ambulance number you can call when you have an emergency. And Lagos probably has the best developed emergency system countrywide. In addition to 767 and 112, there are a few private ambulance services that are available in Lagos. How to improve those would be to build on what is present. So if you put a call into 767 now, somebody will pick up the phone and they will take your emergency. And then they can get an ambulance across, right? But that's Lagos. What happens on the expressway? So this is not something that returnees can, even if all the returnees across the country banded together, you need a fleet of vehicles that work, whether they be ambulances or or helicopters that can lift people. You need for people to develop the culture of stepping out of the way of the ambulance, and for people to develop the culture of moving so that they don't get into more harm. So this is not something that, you know, any one small system will do. It will require for people to work across borders, across state borders, and across local government borders, and especially within the healthcare industry. But the most critical thing, apart from, you know, a political desire to do this, would be the training of emergency responders, doctors, nurses, EMTs, the entire, you know, spectrum of providers.
And do you think there's this place for private investment
in
providing emergency services?
It's already happening. It's already happening. The question is, you know, who's going to invest enough in the beginning? Because you need, you know, patient money. This is not going to come in a hurry.
There is another, sorry to interrupt, this program is for the listeners, and there's another question from Ibadan here. What are your impression about the current impasse between the federal government and the medical practitioners? Who wants to take this? This is obvious. I mean, you've been following the news.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what are my impressions? I will say that.
It's a personal opinion. We won't hold you up on that.
So the first thing is that it is my suspicion that the federal government cannot pay what the medical practitioners are requesting. I believe that they, I don't know what I say, physically cannot pay, right? That's right. The first thing. I think also that they do not value the medical practitioners enough. That's why they cannot pay, because the things that are highly valued in Nigeria get paid for. So right. The question then comes back to, what is the value of the medical practitioner? Now, let's step back a bit. The income of a practitioner in the private sector is significantly different from the income of a practitioner in the public sector.
Yeah.
It used to be the case that when you were in the private sector, you got far better paid. But today, the residents are earning significantly better than the young medical officers in private practice. That is to be understood. And that's because they're doing more work, as it were, in residency. The real issue may therefore lie in the number of slots that are made available during residency, whether or not people at the end of their time agree to leave and make room for more people to come in. It would also be important to know, and I don't know, so these are impressions. These are the questions I'm asking. When they leave, do people fill their slots? Are they paid throughout the time that they are there? Because it sounds like some people actually don't get paid for months and months on end. So, you know, there's a lot of injustice. A lot of injustice, and there's a lack of transparency around incomes, around who's actually getting paid and where and when, and what people are doing when they're supposed to be in the teaching hospitals. So I think that if we were to lay everything open, the stories may actually look different. But one thing is certain. If the government had the money to pay these people, I suspect they would pay them. I feel that we have lost more than we recognize than we recognize.
Today we're talking about brain gain, right, from diaspora back home, but we should be talking about brain gain in terms of retaining residents in residency, because I do understand there's a big shift. People abandoning residency. It may be part of the sort of thing Dr. Adenike experienced when she left. There were no teachers, and that depletes, according to what Professor Madaki told us last week, that is depleting the teachers. And this is something that will probably bring you back to talk about. But before we end today's session, we only have a couple of minutes. I would like Dr. Adenike to give, what advice would you provide to the medical diaspora interested in returning to Nigeria, if you say succinctly, and then we get Dr. Duhati to add a comment, and we should come to the end of the program. Dr. Adenike, what advice?
I would encourage anybody that can to come back to Nigeria. I love the NHS. I love the opportunity the NHS gave me. I couldn't even settle in America because I buy into the ethos and the value of the NHS. And if you read the story of the NHS, it was a small group of people that came together and decided that social healthcare was the way to go, i.e. a government-funded healthcare system. And it has become the envy of the whole world. And so I believe that it will take Nigerians to fix whatever problems Nigerians have. I'm not minimizing the impact of coming back home. I mean, there are things that I miss. I miss orderliness. I miss, you know, not having to worry about electricity. I miss a lot of things that supposedly makes life sane. But I also know that we hold the future of Nigeria in our hands, and it is up to us to make the Nigeria that we want it to be. So I will encourage people in any way that you can contribute. Not everybody can relocate back home. Not everybody can live back home, but everybody has something to contribute.
Thank you very much. That's very, very interesting. Dr. Duarte, what are your parting words to Nigerian diaspora who want to come back home to practice medicine?
I think the first thing I would say is that don't assume that you're coming to work with a stethoscope, and there are many things that you can do to provide healthcare for Nigerians without opening a clinic or a hospital. Self-care is an important part of what is now happening, and self-care is to be encouraged. It involves education, the ability to provide digital care. So it's not, when we think about medical practitioners, I love the idea of people who are also working in digital health, and think that they should be encouraged to engage a lot of people. Everybody and their uncle is on Instagram. Your healthcare provider can also be reached on your phone. I think innovation is going to be an important part of what we do over the course of the next few years. And I think that with everything that we're doing, we should think about leaving nobody behind. So I hear Tony very loud when she says, you know, the NHS is a good model to look at, but there's probably more that we can do. We can innovate even more for Nigerians, and across the African continent there are great models that we can look at. So look around and come in with every good idea you have, and don't be afraid to say, I failed and I'm starting again, and I'm still going to be here.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we never have enough time for this great discussion. We're always pressed for time. You've done a great job, ladies. We really appreciate your contribution. On behalf of the listeners, I say thank you to you all. I'd like to also thank Toye and the crew, and of course, Dr. Deji Anyanrede. Doctors Run, we're now close for today, and we'll be back next week to bring back other interesting topics. Have a great week ahead.